After standing firm on its plan to ban genetically modified corn from Germany and the attendant pesticides from China, Mexico capitulated to the demands of the United States and canceled its plan to ban. That leads us to ask, why did Mexico stand down from its maize standoff?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1363rd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Yokohama who are tuned into the podcast as we stream along on the food chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, a while back I participated in a panel discussion at the U.S. Farmer and Rancher Alliance International Biotech Conference in Chicago. The subject was genetically modified crops. If memory serves, the panel included the presidents of the National Corn Growers Association, National Pork Producers Council, American Soybean Association, and others. The audience consisted of the biotech industry professionals who re-engineer the genetic intelligence of crops to make them more compliant to the needs of farmers and ranchers. In my concluding remarks for this panel, I gestured to the biotech professionals in the audience and said, "You know, the technology you have developed to re-engineer crops is truly miraculous. You have made it possible for one farmer to grow 1,000 acres of crops with no weeds or insects. That truly is a miracle. Your technology has made you rich and made the farmers and ranchers of America happy. However, one day, the people who eat your food are going to wake up and say, 'Hey, what's in this technology for us, other than food that is infused with insecticides and drenched in herbicides?' When that day comes, you're going to need to provide the people who eat your food with an answer. What will your answer be?" That day appears to have arrived, but to my knowledge, no answer has been given, other than, "Shut up and eat your cheap food." That leads us to the recent capitulation of Mexico on its maize standoff with the United States, Germany, and China. And so we ask, why did Mexico stand down from its maize standoff? Well, who better to ask than Carrie Gillum, who is the author of Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science, and the Monsanto Papers, Deadly Secrets, Corporate Corruption, and One Man's Search for Justice. So let's welcome back to the Food Chain, Carrie Gillum. Carrie, welcome.
Well, hello. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you back. You know, this is the third time we've sat down to discuss food that has been genetically modified to be more compliant to the needs of farmers. Since, you know, we last talked, you've been engaged in chronicling this standoff between Mexico and pretty much the rest of the world over genetically modified crops. How did you become so involved?
Well, I've been covering, you know, as you know, and you mentioned my two books, I've been covering the agrochemical industry for 20 some years now, since, gosh, more than 20, since 1998. So a long, long time. And I've been following these issues that you talked about in your introduction with GMO crops and pesticides and the evolving science and concerns, and as well as, you know, our regulatory and corporate assurances that we shouldn't be concerned. So the issues with Mexico, you know, are more evidence that, as you say, that, you know, consumers and government leaders in many countries have become increasingly concerned over the last several years and decades with these, you know, genetically altered foods that we're all consuming, and largely because of the pesticides that are used on them or genetically engineered into them to make them toxic to insects.
paying attention, and I'm happy that somebody is, because because I think we need to pay attention to this. Well, before we get to the actual Mexican standoff, let's talk a little bit. Let's do a quick review. First of all, why are crops like corn re-engineered? What's the purpose, Carrie?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, way back when, that has many answers, right? So the companies who genetically alter these crops, and there are many, you know, corn and soybeans and cotton, canola, sugar beet, the companies that engineer them will say that they have altered the DNA in these crops, and they sell these genetically altered seeds and license these genetically altered traits, license the science and the technology to benefit farmers and to benefit consumers and to make it easier for farmers to grow crops in abundance, just, you know, to fight off weeds in the fields that could choke off nutrients and moisture from the crops, and to repel insects. And so, you know, they've been doing this. Monsanto was the leader. Monsanto is now owned by Bayer, but Monsanto was really a leader in this technology, in this industry, starting in the 1990s. And, you know, they rolled this out. And now in the U.S., most of the corn and soybeans grown in the United States are genetically altered. A large amount of our cotton is also genetically altered, and sugar beets and many other crops, as I mentioned. But what we've seen over the years is, yes, this has brought some benefits to farmers. It's mainly benefited the companies that have attached very high premiums and patents to these products that they sell, and they've made billions and billions of dollars. But it's really locked farmers into a dependence on genetically altered crops and the use of the chemicals that go along with the genetically altered crops. And, you know, you could read my book. You could write a whole book about sort of the ramifications that this has had on environmental health and Mother Nature, where you've seen weed resistance develop and accelerate. So farmers are having to use more and more herbicides and more different types of herbicides. You've seen insects develop resistance to crops that were genetically altered to fight off insects. And so you've had to, you know, see more and more of that. More chemicals, more resistance, more messing with Mother Nature in a lot of ways that has proven to be harmful and has sparked these concerns in countries like Mexico.
Yeah, with respect to that, to the technology, it seems like the best money science can buy claims there is nothing to be frightened about with either the genetically modified crops or the chemicals with which the food is grown. Carrie Gillum, do you think the science is settled?
You know, there are many parts to that. You know, it depends on which chemical you're talking about, which crop you're talking about. I think the science is much more clear on the application of certain herbicides to food crops and leaving residues on those crops and the impact that the increasing amounts of herbicides that we're spraying directly onto crops and onto farm fields, the impacts that that's having on environmental health, on the soil. You know, we're seeing glyphosate, which is the subject of the book Whitewash that you mentioned. Glyphosate has been so widely used that it's become so pervasive that it's in the drinking water, it's in the food we consume, it's found in human urine, it's found in rainfall because it's so pervasive in our environment now. And it's precisely because crops were genetically altered by Monsanto to withstand being sprayed by glyphosate, that glyphosate use increased so dramatically all around the world. And it's one of the reasons why Mexico has moved to ban glyphosate. And there, the ban was supposed to go into effect at the end of March, April 1, and Mexico then, under great pressure and duress from agrochemical industry interests and from U.S. trade officials, decided to delay that ban indefinitely.
And that is the question of the day, which is, why did Mexico stand down from its maize standoff, given the extent to which it's been fighting it? From your extensive research into the question, there seems to be two things that are of concern. One, Are the genetically modified crops themselves safe? And the other is, are the chemicals that are used to grow the genetically modified crops safe to eat?
Right. Right. And with glyphosate, so for instance, glyphosate, you know, is used. Glyphosate has been around for a very long time. It was designed to act as a replacement, so to speak, for paraquat, or to give farmers another option, because paraquat is a weed killer that is very, very toxic, acutely so that if a farmer would accidentally spill a little, splash a little, inhale a little, swallow a little, you know, he could be dead in a few weeks. Glyphosate doesn't act like that. But glyphosate has been tied to non-Hodgkin lymphoma and cancer over for chronic use. So farmers who might be spraying this, or gardeners who might be spraying Roundup, which glyphosate, you know, was the active ingredient in for decades, would be exposed through their skin. And there was a connection shown to cancers like non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Mm-hmm. And it has been classified as a probable human carcinogen. So that's one chemical. You have 2,4-D that's also used on genetically altered crops now. And it is defined as a possible human carcinogen by the World Health Organization. So yes, there's a lot of science that shows that these pesticides can be impactful to human health as well as environmental health. Several pesticides are tied to neurodevelopmental harm, particularly in children. You know, you have liver, kidney, cancer effects, Parkinson's disease in the event of paraquat. There are a lot of harms that come with widespread use of toxic chemicals that are designed to kill things, right?
So what you say then would lead one to believe there is a difference of opinion in science as to whether...
There very definitely is a difference of opinion. There are many scientists who say, look at the evidence, as in the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Look at the evidence. This very clearly, you know, is carcinogenic or has carcinogenic markers, et cetera. Then you have a whole group of other scientists, many who have been paid to be consultants to or work with the very companies that sell these chemicals, who say, no, this is all quite safe. And the evidence shows us that it's safe, so don't worry about it. And our regulatory agency, as has been demonstrated many, many times, really follows the lead of the companies that sell the chemicals much more so than they do independent scientists. And that's been documented over and over again through, you know, internal communications and all sorts of evidence. That's how it works, is that they follow the lead of the company selling the chemicals to tell them if the chemicals are safe or not. Much like in the pharmaceutical industry, you know, selling drugs. They rely on the companies making the money from the drugs to tell them if it's safe, which doesn't seem like an ideal system.
That kind of leads us to wonder, is science real or is it for sale? And there is a difference. Ladies and gentlemen, you're tuned into the Food Chain Radio program. Today's topic, Mexico's maize standoff. And when we get back from this quick break, we're going to ask Carrie Gillum, author of the Monsanto Papers and Whitewashed, whether Mexico can stand up to the international cartel of chemical manufacturers who are watching over us with their genetically modified crops. This is the Food Chain. Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, one thing I can pretty much guarantee us all is that we are eating glyphosate, weed killer, among many other things. Some time ago, I did an interview with a doctor in a laboratory research doctor at UCSF, University of California, San Francisco Medical Center, who was examining blood being sent to him from all over the United States for one thing, but he also tested those blood samples for glyphosate and found that 97% of those samples contained glyphosate. So it's pretty close that we all have some glyphosate in our bloods, in our blood system. So is that safe or not? You know, 20 years ago, I also featured Dr. Ignacio Chapala on a food chain show titled The Missing Maize of Mexico. And the story was about the native races of corn in Oaxaca, which is said to be the global center for corn genetic diversity. And Mexico was standing up to the world for destroying its domestic corn agriculture that is based on that reservoir of native genes by bringing in genetically modified crops that were pretty much causing the native races of genes to disappear. That was over 22 years ago. And so Mexico's kind of been standing up to it ever since. Kerry Gillum, when did Mexico decide that it would try to ban these GMOs from coming into the country?
Well, Mexico, as you said, I mean, Mexico, gosh, has been expressing concerns for as long as I can remember, I think, particularly with genetically altered corn, you know, and maize. Corn is very key and central to the Mexican culture and diet and their biodiversity. And it is much more than just something that they eat or that they feed their livestock. And that has been sort of at the heart of their dispute and their ongoing trade dispute with the United States right now. In 2020, they did again put forward a proclamation that they were going to ban genetically modified corn. And this would be from human diet. It was sort of a nod to U.S. concerns that, you know, it could still be used for livestock, but in the tortillas and the other foods that are really central to their culture and their diet, they would not be allowing genetically modified corn. And this was in 2020. And ever since then, I mean, they are still just being battered by the United States and Canada, arguing that they can't do this. It's not based on science, that they're crazy, basically, for thinking that GMO corn is bad in any way. And the U.S. has come after them. And so they are now in a, you know, an official dispute period, trade dispute with the U.S., you know, threatening all sorts of sanctions and things like that. And there was a panel that is hearing both sides and weighing sort of, you know, who will get to prevail, I guess, in this trade dispute. But many people are outraged by it because they're saying the science is indeed on Mexico's side. It's not on the side of the U.S., but it is on the side of Mexico, because there is quite a bit of science that shows that there is harm associated with GMO corn. And that's been what I've been watching and writing about, and because it really is an interesting question. You know, who should get to decide? Mexico says it should be able to decide for its own people and its own environment, that Mexican officials should be able to decide whether or not they allow these things in the diet and in the environment. And the U.S. is saying, no, you really don't have that right.
Well, you know, way back in Food Chain Radio number 1157, we did our first conversation about this, and we were talking about Dwayne Johnson, the Monsanto, which kind of was the landmark case, was it not? Not against the biotech giants. This stuff really is causing harm, and I do believe Dwayne Johnson won that fight. What was it about again?
Yeah, Lee Johnson, Dwayne Lee. Yeah. He had a lot of names, but everybody calls him Lee.
Okay.
Won that battle. He was the very first plaintiff to take Monsanto to court and to trial to try to prove that Roundup, that exposure to glyphosate-based herbicides made by Monsanto, caused him to develop cancer, non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And it was that's what my second book is all about, the Monsanto papers. A tragic, tragic story. I mean, the man was young and fit and vital and worked as a groundskeeper for schools and was spraying, you know, these glyphosate chemicals on schoolyards and got some very heavy exposures directly onto his skin and then developed these terrible lesions and the blood cancer, non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And doctors said he, you know, would not survive it and would be dead. And so they rushed him to trial and he did prevail, was the first to beat Monsanto and to prove that it can cause cancer.
Well, after that, it appears as though our biotech companies like Monsanto ran for the hills, which is to say, Bayer or Monsanto sold itself to Bayer AG, the big German chemical concern, right? Makers of aspirin.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, Monsanto saw the handwriting on the wall, I believe, and they sold it, the timing was really smart. They sold the company and closed on the purchase, so they were done and out and had their money just as the Lee Johnson trial was getting underway. And so they were out and Bayer was in, and the verdict then came in August of 2018. And Bayer's stock immediately plummeted and wiped out, you know, roughly half of their market capitalization. And Bayer has been struggling ever since with investor lawsuits and questions and financial struggles because of their purchase of Monsanto.
So Germany owns Monsanto, or what's left of it. I suspect they got rid of the name Monsanto as soon as they possibly could. Probably something like Bayer AG Crop Sciences or something like that now. And
yes, they go by Bayer, although in the litigation, the names are still Monsanto.
Okay. And then the other big agriculture giant, Syngenta, sold itself to China.
Yes, Syngenta is part of ChemChina, or a company that is essentially owned by the Chinese government, although they remain headquartered in Switzerland to a degree, but yes, they are Chinese controlled now.
Okay. And I guess where this is leading me is to ask the question, how come the United States of America is standing up for Germany and China in this Mexican standoff over maize? What are we doing in the middle of this? Why are we the ones that are standing up against Mexico?
It is interesting, isn't it? That, and I thought of that as I was writing, you know, one of my last pieces, that these companies aren't even U.S. companies anymore, right? And the emails that you see, the correspondence going back and forth between these companies and our U.S. trade representatives and our U.S. Department of Agriculture, you know, are all quite cozy and connected. And, you know, we would like you to do this, and here's what you can say. And, you know, the companies are telling our U.S. officials how to act, what to say, when to do it. You know, and again, they're not U.S. companies. But the answer to your question very clearly is because U.S. farmers are U.S. citizens, and they're the ones growing these crops and wanting to export a lot of GMO corn to Mexico. And if Mexico doesn't want to take it, that's going to hurt U.S. farmers. So certainly there's a vested interest there.
Now, as I understand it, Mexico is not the only country to stand up against GMOs and their attendant chemical inputs. True?
Yeah, I mean, numerous countries have been concerned about GMOs. I mean, across the African continent, you've seen that, you know, over many, many years. The chemicals, at least in my view and my experience, the chemicals have been the greater concern, I think, are the more pressing concern, because the science is so robust about the harm that they do. not, and again, not just to people, but to the environment. And, you know, it's a very real concern because the environment is our food, our water, the air we breathe, the pollinators, biodiversity. You know, we don't live on this planet alone. We rely on this intricate relationship that we have between the species, and pesticides are very, very damaging to a lot of very important species.
Well, you know, when the dentist asked me what I thought of the GMO controversy, I said, well, I am not certain that genetically modified organisms are harmful in any way, because I don't think I've ever seen any real science that documents the difference. I don't know if there is, but I do know that I'm highly suspect of the chemicals and the extent to which we use those chemicals. That appears to me to be the major problem. Now, in Mexico, I can see where the genetics might be an issue too. If the GMO genetics, for example, were to leak into Oaxaca, which is the focal point for genetic diversity of corn or maize, and get into those native races of corn, would that not allow Bayer AG to claim ownership of those native races of corn? Now, that's mm-hmm. something that happened with Canadian canola farmer Percy Smyser. So I can see where they would be kind of nervous of that, because if Bayer's genes got into the native races of corn, the corn could be tested, and there's the gene, we own you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Mexico has certainly expressed its desire to keep, you know, sort of as pure as possible its own native varieties, and that is very important to it. And you're right. I mean, from what I've seen, there isn't nearly as much science on what do genetically modified crops, what impact do they have on human health? Now, a large part of that is because nobody's really had to study it. I mean, the companies didn't have to demonstrate safety to regulators when they rolled those out. They essentially, you know, grandfathered them in and said there's really no difference. So there was a voluntary kind of review process with our regulatory apparatus, but they didn't have to have the more rigorous, very specific scientific studies that they have to do with chemicals. And you also think about it, you know, nobody's really going out into a field, you know, and munching down on a cob of corn that's just been sprayed with a chemical or that is, you know, genetically altered to be toxic to pesticides. They're mixed into foods and people are exposed to all of these different things and they're eating all these different foods. So no one is doing like a epidemiology study really of people who are eating GMO foods and trying to track their health versus people who don't eat GMO foods. There have been people that have tried to do small things like that, but how do you really do it and screen and know that nothing else that you're consuming or being exposed to, you know, is impacting you? You can't put people in a cage in a laboratory like a lab rat and study this. But the people that have looked at it, you know, there's been evidence, you know, in livestock and the impacts on livestock where their diets are more closely controlled. There have been scientists that have said that these are harming, you know, cattle and other livestock. And you have some science that shows that the level of toxins in these genetically modified crops and in corn has been heightened, you know, that it's gone from like 2 parts per million, these toxins, to up to now 50 parts per million to 100 parts per million.
So those would be, with respect to those toxins, they would be the toxins that the plant manufactures itself to protect itself, correct?
Correct. There's a whole variety of, we're probably confusing listeners because there are different GMO crops. There are those that are designed to be tolerant of herbicides. So you can spray directly over the top of them and they don't die, but the weeds die. And then you have these crops, corn, that has been genetically modified to be its own bug killer, to manufacture its own toxins so that insects that may want to come munch on it, you know, will die or be repelled. And those are the ones that there's particular concern about because of the toxins that are engineered directly into the plant.
Okay. So there's really two reasons why Mexico might be nervous or afraid of the GMOs themselves as opposed to the chemicals that are attendant to the GMOs. One of them is that those GMOs might invade the native species and in effect become a property of Bayer AG or whoever has the gene patent. And the other is the possibility of the natural pesticides made by the plant itself could be enhanced greatly and have an adverse effect on the people who eat them. So two reasons to essentially be suspect of GMOs themselves. Although the science is such that the only thing we can safely say about the efficacy or safety of GMOs themselves is that we don't know because we don't know.
Exactly. And when Mexico, you know, they put out a 189 page report, you know, earlier this year that really lays out exactly why they don't want GMO corn and they don't want glyphosate. And they say they have very clear scientific evidence about the harmful effects.
Well, we're going to pick that up if we can. We're going to take a quick break, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Carrie Gillum, author of Whitewash and the Monsanto Papers, and some precise insights as to why Mexico is backing down from its Mexican standoff over GMOs. Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Polyface Farms, Joel Salatin.
Few how-to books could be more appropriate for our times than MetroFarm, a truly comprehensive manual. MetroFarm makes the whole embedded food system doable. It's a must-read.
USDA Director Bud Kerr.
Big book. MetroFarm describes the agronomic, economic, and managerial concepts required to generate substantial profits from agricultural locales near metropolitan areas.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
How would you like to be part of a great mission?
You can help the Epoch Times fight for a free press.
America's news outlets no longer tell you the truth. In fact, 90% of the media is owned by just 6 corporations.
But honest traditional journalism isn't dead. You can find it in the pages of the Epoch Times. Go to readepoch.com and try it.
1 month for just $1.
When you do, you're supporting real news and helping us in the fight against fake news.
You'll read the truth about how China promotes communism inside the United States and why so many American companies hide the truth about China.
You'll read stories about American politics written without a political agenda.
It's journalism that you don't get from our dishonest legacy media and without the tyranny of big tech.
Be part of a great mission. Subscribe now, 1 month for $1 at readepoch.com. That's readepoch.com.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get 2 friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money and when they're through, they'll get 2 friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is 2 numbers. One is 2, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy it'll make you blush. Pledge 2 local bucks each day. Get 2 others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at MetroFarm.com.
2x2. So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, there is a problem with GMO corn being shipped into Mexico, our neighbor down south. That problem is they don't want it. And our farmers want to sell it to them, and Mexican government and Mexican consumers are not so certain, don't want it. Two reasons, really, for the Mexican people to not want it. One is that don't know much about the GMO or genes in themselves, the possible dangers of there. We don't really know much about the impact of genetically modified foods on people who eat them, because we just don't know. There's not been any studies. But the attendant chemicals used to grow the GMOs, we know quite a bit about. And what we do know is causing a lot of alarm in a lot of people. Not the people who sell those chemicals, but the people who eat them. And that, I think, is really the big red flag for Mexico. You think that's a fair assumption, Carrie Gillum?
Yeah, I think for sure. And I've pulled up here in our little break, I pulled up a couple quotes that Mexico has said in its report to the U.S. and during this trade dispute. And they say there is clear scientific evidence of the harmful effects of direct consumption of GM corn grain in corn flour tortilla dough related products. And they say they want more evidence. More evidence is needed as to whether and what extent such risks are transmitted to other food products. So Mexico, and this is the point we should have made, I guess, right at the very beginning, Mexico has been saying to the U.S., prove to us this is safe. And the U.S. is saying, but it always, its position on all of this is, no, you prove it's not safe. The assumption by the U.S. is that things are safe unless proven not to be. And in Europe and Mexico and many other countries, they prefer to take a more precautionary approach and say, we want to know it's safe. We want it to be proven safe before we allow people to eat it and spray it and drink it. But in the U.S., we don't do that. In the U.S., we say, unless you can prove to us that it's not safe, we're going to allow it. So it's a very fundamental difference of approach on these chemicals and these crops.
So here in the United States, we start with the assumption that the people who manufacture the chemicals are telling us the truth.
We do, yes.
And in Mexico and Europe and elsewhere in the world, they say, not so likely to trust these people who are manufacturing the chemicals to say that it's safe. Want to see it proven to be safe. What would it take to prove that it's safe? Isn't that like proving a negative or something like that?
I don't know. I think it's almost harder to prove that it's unsafe, right? There are a lot of times the studies that are required and that are submitted are pretty short-term studies. For instance, with glyphosate and Roundup, Monsanto was never required by the EPA to do long-term studies on the actual product that it was selling, the actual like Roundup and formulated products, which contain glyphosate and then other chemicals and surfactants. They never had to produce long-term studies on the actual product. They could say, we're only going to produce this study. This is, one study on the active ingredient, which is glyphosate. And we're going to, construct it in this way. And we're not going to publish it. We're not going to have it be peer reviewed, but we're going to give it to you, the EPA, and it says that it's safe. And you're going to believe that. And we have lots of evidence as going back through documents, as I laid out in that first book in Whitewash, where even in some of the studies that the companies submit, the EPA says to them, hold on, this, like, all these mice are getting tumors if you expose to this chemical. And the ones in your control group that you didn't expose it to didn't get these weird tumors. So this doesn't look good. And then you see Monsanto go back to them and go, you know what? Don't really worry about that. You're not really understanding the way that the science should
don't
be interpreted.
Look at these mice. Look at those mice.
Yeah. And I'm not like making that up. That's actually what occurred back in the 1980s with Monsanto and its fundamental study that it gave to the EPA to determine whether or not, you know, glyphosate was essentially going to be allowed to be sprayed on all of these crops. And it became a battle with EPA scientists, between the company and EPA scientists. And eventually the elected people who, you know, rely on campaign contributions and are pretty tight with lobbyists, overruled their own scientists and said, yeah, we're going to believe Monsanto over our scientists.
Well, Carrie Gillum, as a person who has been looking intently at this subject for a couple of decades or more, what do you think of the relationship of science to government? Is science real? I see that sign on yard signs and that and other sayings. Science is real. Well, yes, but how real is science when it comes to glyphosate and GMOs?
I think science is a very important discipline in which we learn and we evolve and we expand upon our knowledge about really important topics, right? And I think it is to be respected and embraced. I think that it gets corrupted for many, many different reasons. You know, we don't have good independent funding of science. The EPA doesn't do its own scientific studies. It doesn't commission all of these independent scientific studies on all of these different chemicals. Now, could it? I don't know. Maybe if we didn't give billions of dollars to Ukraine and Israel and everybody else, maybe we could fund more independent science in the U.S. I don't know. We don't apply our resources in that direction. We tend to rely on the companies that sell the products to produce the science. And that seems just on its face to be problematic because, of course, they have a very vested interest in the science showing their product to be safe.
Well, not only do they have a vested interest, but they have a pocket full of cash.
They have a pocket full of cash. And it has been seen that they, you know, can get very close with academics, people working at different universities. They funnel a lot of money to universities. They then take a lot of control over the direction of the research. They employ people at journals, you know, that publish science. They employ them as consultants. They pay them $400-$600 an hour. They get very cozy with very important people in the scientific community to embrace and support their narrative. And you know, you have people who lobby for the chemical industry who then go work for the EPA and versa. People who work at the EPA and become very friendly with the chemical industry, and then they leave and they go take a very high paying job as a lobbyist for the chemical industry. And it just happened again earlier this year in February, where a top EPA official is now running CropLife America, which is the top lobbyist for the agrochemical industry. That announcement was made in February. So, you know, it's a revolving door. It's a cozy connection, and it leaves all of us wishing and wanting, I think, that we had more rigorous protections for our health.
And so Mexico, looking at what's going on up in the United States, a couple of years ago decided to stand up and say, we are going to ban GMOs and the chemicals that go with them. What happened when they made that announcement?
Well, what we see in the documents and what we know is that the companies that sell them and a lot of the farm industry interests and the U.S. trade reps and the USDA said, oh, no, you're not. You know, don't you dare. And they have been fighting back against Mexico. And, there is a trade pact, right, between Mexico and Canada and the U.S., and there are rules on that trade pact. And the U.S. is saying Mexico is breaking the rules. And so there is a trade complaint, and there is now I don't know if you'd call them hearings, but, the commission is taking evidence and will make some sort of decision at some point on whether or not Mexico is in violation of this agreement.
But Mexico
right now. Yeah. So, I mean, right now Mexico's back is kind of up against the wall, right? Being pressured by the U.S. That wants to control what Mexico allows in its food supply.
And what does Mexico have to fight back with?
Mexico says it has the science on its side, and it wants the U.S. to prove, as we mentioned earlier, prove that these things are safe, bring forward evidence to prove that they are safe. And they're saying that the U.S. can't do that and hasn't done that. So they very much is sort of the Mexican standoff, right? That we
there we are.
Yeah.
And yet Mexico agreed to back down. To stand down from its standoff. Why?
They agreed to delay the ban on glyphosate.
Ah.
They backed off on that ban on glyphosate that was supposed to take effect April the 1st. And from what I understand, it came down to, sort of a single vote and a lot of arm twisting and pressure. And there's no definitive date now as to when this ban would actually take place. And there's a lot of talk of, well, we have to wait until we have something else that we can kill weeds with. It's all sort of murky as to what's going to happen next on that.
And there was one other country, I believe Thailand, that threatened to do a ban too and was similarly put upon by the United States, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thailand, and I wrote extensively about that, as did others. You can see it from different perspectives. I mean, from a journalistic perspective, the fact that the U.S. is trying to bully other countries into and forcing them to take chemicals and foods and things that they don't want and that they feel jeopardize the health of their people just seems outrageous, right? And that's very much what the U.S. did to Thailand. And they prevailed. And Thailand backed away from its planned ban on glyphosate. And the U.S. has tried, to bully the EU and different countries within the European Union who have wanted to ban glyphosate. So, they definitely stand up. Our U.S. taxpayer dollars are helping helping these big companies keep their products flowing, even when countries don't want them.
Well, there you go. So, wondering, is there anything small countries like Mexico and Thailand can do to stand up to the big money of companies like Bayer AG and Syngenta? What can little people do to stand up to the big money?
I think with Mexico, the jury's still out. We don't know if they will prevail in this trade pact or not. I don't know, or this trade dispute. I don't know what the odds are, but we're watching. And I think if they do prevail, that will really be a very powerful time in history that other countries might want to take note of and follow in Mexico's footsteps. But can they? Can they under such, pressure and power from the United States? And I don't know. I think we'll see. And in terms of other people, consumers, what do? I guess you vote with your dollar and you decide what you eat and what food you buy and what you consume, but you still are unlikely to escape completely the pervasive pesticide use that we have here in America.
It's like the earth is covered in glyphosate, and it's in just about everything. It's in all of us.
It certainly is.
Almost it certainly all of us, is. Yeah.
Yeah, it certainly is.
So I guess when it gets right down to it, those of us who eat food are left with a choice of how to go about what food to eat. And it would seem like they want us, their message, the biotech message, the biotech industry, the chemical industry, would prefer that we just shut the hell up and eat the cheap food.
That is true. And of course, many people shopping now are going to be like, well, what's cheap food? You know,
yeah,
that's right with inflation. But yeah, it's very difficult. Conventionally grown foods, crops generally are cheaper than organic, right? And those conventionally grown are typically going to be grown with a whole array of different pesticides, not just glyphosate. And you will see that chemicals that are known to be dangerous, you know, that have been banned. You have another example of a chemical that we wrote about not too long ago that had been banned. The EPA says it's a possible human carcinogen, but the EPA has just expanded its use again. So you can get that when you munch on some celery or some vegetables.
As soon as you turn your back, they're right back in the door. Carrie Gillum, thank you so much. Carrie, the author of Whitewash and the Monsanto Papers. Find her at carriegillum.com and read what she has to say, because what she has to say is not really going to be what they have to say. Thank you all for tuning in, Food Chain. Remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't. Stay tuned for more of What's Eating What next week on the Food Chain. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.